Welcome to the Positively Past, Positively Present podcast. My name is Ketlow, and I'm a researcher practitioner in the field of arts and health, and I've been collaborating with Positively UK since 2016. This series of podcasts came about through a project we've been doing looking at Positively Women's Archive, where we've been looking at the power of the archive to allow us to look back in order to be able to move forward. On the podcast each week, we'll speak with different guests who have been connected with Positively UK, both past and present. We explore different themes relating to the experience of women living with HIV. All of these have been recorded online as we wanted to include a wide range of voices, both safely and across borders. The nature of these conversations cover topics that some listeners might find difficult. So we invite you to please consult the episode's show notes before listening to the podcast. And finally, huge thanks to colleagues both at Positively UK and the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama who've helped bring these podcasts together. We hope you find these discussions illuminating and insightful. Welcome to the Positively Women Past and Present podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Positively Past, Positively Present project, of which this podcast series forms part of. I'm joined by Sylvia Petretti, Neo Moepi, and Mariam Shaharadin. Sylvia is the CEO of Positively UK. Neo is the Women's Project Coordinator at Positively UK, and Mariam is the co-researcher on this project with me. So welcome everyone, and thanks so much for joining us. Do you want to tell us a bit about where you're joining us from?
I am in my front room in London, in Brixton, South London, and hopefully the cats are going to be quiet.
I am in my living room, Northwest Colindale, and just got my cat locked up in the room so he doesn't come jumping.
Great. And Mariam?
I'm sitting in my flat in Northwest London, and my cats are also not in this room, so hopefully no noise.
Excellent, thank you. So I think to start off with, I'd love to hear a bit about how the project came about. Why did we start working together on Positively Past, Positively Present? And Sylvia, do you want to talk us through?
Yes, thank you, Kat. Thank you for having us here. So this year is 35 years since the starting of Positively Women, when Positively Women was set up in 1987. Positively Women was one of the first organizations in the world set up by women living with HIV, for women living with HIV, at the height of the HIV epidemic, you know, at the height of the AIDS crisis in 1987. I felt it was really important that we had a space to explore her story, to explore where as women living with HIV, our services originated from, the things that we learned in the past 35 years, the things that we have discovered about ourselves, about our communities, how we have changed. And as women living with HIV, very often we are left out of the narrative, in spite of the fact that the majority of people who live with HIV on this planet are women. And at present, I think 19 million women are living with HIV around the globe. So, I really wanted for us to have this space because I think that our story here in the UK was quite exemplary. So I felt it was really, really important for us to have a moment to commemorate and to get people together, to get people to reflect, to get people to learn, and to see also how this story is still very present now, and it's now in a way our roots in a women's organization have shaped the ethos of an organization that supports everyone living with HIV.
Thanks, Sylvia, and I think that's really the key part of all of this project that's really coming out, is that actually as an organization that was started by women and for women, and actually the ethos and how all of that is sort of threaded through so many of the different projects and the ways in which Positively UK works as an organization is key. And we're going to come back to that point in particular. But for now, I'd love to hear from Neo and Mariam about what exactly does the project look like? What have we done? So Neo, do you want to tell us a bit about the work, please?
So the work has been, quite exciting. Looking back, at the history of possibly women, and also kind of capturing, the present, it's been incredible to see the women now and looking at the women then, the women that we have lost along the way, the women who are still living but have moved on with their lives, but had really left a very rich, path for the women that are coming now, going into, interrogating the archives and looking back at the magazines, the pictures. It brought a lot, because a lot of women stopped living once they got diagnosed. They're still in this world, but the life has got, stagnant because of the diagnosis, because of the stigma, because, the HIV has demoralized people. Going through this journey together has helped to shape some of us to appreciate, life. Most importantly, to be in this country, I would say, where there is free treatment, where everyone can access treatment and start to live, their life normal. So for me, it has been really capturing the past and bringing it into the now and looking into how, the future would look like living the life with HIV.
Awesome. Thanks, Neo. Particularly, I think what you've said about the importance of really recognizing how much has been gained as well. And that's one of the things that really has stood out and is something we're going to be discussing in other episodes during this series. So thanks for linking that together for us. Mariam, would you like to talk to us a bit about what we've done? So we've mentioned archives a few times. Can you talk us a bit about the role of the archive in this work?
Yes. So Positively UK have archives, and they're stored at the London Metropolitan Archives and at the Bishopsgate Library. So part of this project is actually going into those archives and being able to actually open and uncover and see those archives with members of Positively UK, specifically majority of the women's group. And so sort of like phase one, let's say, of the project was inviting the women to the archives, specifically to London Metropolitan Archives. And getting to look at the archives and picking out different bits from the Positively Women archive, and then running workshops with the members and creating creative responses to the archives. There's such a wealth of knowledge in those archives, and it was so fascinating and amazing to be there and witness those. And there's everything from the original Positively Women magazines, and there's photographs, like cards and loads of newsletters and reports, a lot to do with sort of HIV history, and that have been stored at these archives. And then we've been collating and sort of curating the archives, going through and seeing what do we want to focus on, what would we like to talk about and explore further, and sort of bringing out specific archives into the workshops, having sort of discussions with the women about the archives, what it means to them, and sort of looking back at the past to then sort of see where we're going in the future, and then running different creative activities, anything from sort of drama to writing, poetry. We've made t-shirts and we've made zines as well to recognize the women's, Positively Women's magazines. We actually made little zines as well. So lots of arts and crafts. And we're going to be running those workshops again soon in the archives.
Awesome, thanks. And as part of that, we're going to culminate in a big celebration at the end of November to celebrate and really, I think, draw more attention to this incredible anniversary of Positively Women, now Positively UK, 35 years. One thing that everyone's sort of started to talk about and that I'd love to hear more about is Why is this project so important today? So Sylvia, you started to hint towards that in terms of ideas of value. Neo, you talked a bit about this idea that for some women, they stopped living with their diagnoses. Why do we need to make space for women living with HIV, for her story?
Myself, as a woman living with HIV, I think one of the first symptoms that I had was never like a physical one, because luckily when I was diagnosed, I was still healthy. I just, by chance, I had this HIV test and it came positive, and there was nothing physically wrong with me. So I always say the first symptom that I had from HIV was this sense of incredible shame, this sense of being marked as somebody that was worthless. And probably for the first 2 years of my diagnosis, I couldn't even tell my best friend. Or, you know, it was just like something to be hidden, something to be ashamed of, something, like becoming an untouchable overnight. You know, the fear of getting really sick, the fear of disappointing my parents, not having a future anymore. It was just like being, you know, completely immersed in really in the most negative experience you can imagine as a human being. You know, I was just a young woman, just 30 years old. And I just feel that the only way to counteract this narrative is to tell our real stories, that they're not stories of shame. They're not stories of negativity, really. They are stories very often of resilience, of sisterhood, of women reaching to each other in the most difficult times of our lives to, you know, to create something together, especially when you know that there is nobody else you can talk to, and how powerful the space is. If we want to overcome all the negativity that has surrounded HIV for women, we need to talk about women's stories, and not the, you know, the idealized women, but the real women. Us.
The real fabulous woman. And the joy of working with both of you, but also actually in sitting with the archive. And when I remember that day when we first went to see the archive and we saw all these photos, and actually the longevity and that idea of sisterhood and that idea of holding each other close by. Neo, please tell us a bit about why we need this project. What is it about the lack of attention with women's lived experience of HIV?
Yeah, for me, it's, you know, for women to have that space to be themselves, to be able to open up and talk about HIV and talk about things that or issues that they wouldn't normally talk about out there. Not being able to be free and open up and talk is the most important, because like the self-stigma is kind of hitting hard on most of the women living with HIV, you know, feeling less worth, feeling like they've done something wrong. So it's just to create these spaces, you know, to start making positive narratives about ourselves, you know, accepting, you know, ourselves and beating, you know, the stigma. I think these spaces are really, really important to start to live our lives. We talk about lots of topics, you know, relationships, you know, sex, you know, HIV is associated with sex. You know, the stigma is great. And for women to be able to come about this uncomfortable, you know, topics out there, for me, I couldn't ask, you know, for anything more. The space is very, 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 very important.
Thanks, Neo. I think listening to what you just said, and just there's two things I wanted to draw our listeners' attention to, is whilst we're often playing or we're coming at a topic from through performance or through a creative arts, actually what's being held in that space comes back to the sisterhood that Sylvia talks about, that really careful, challenging but held space. Mariam started her work and her collaboration with Positively UK during COVID online, now has the joy of actually working in the room with people. Can you tell us a bit about some of those moments of creative interaction that have really stood out for you?
I can, yes. I did start when I started working with Positively UK, it was online. And actually, this project is the first time I got to meet some of those women in person. And it's, I think it's the same for them. And the first workshop, I remember when people were filing through into this space, I realised that a lot of these women hadn't actually seen each other in person in quite a long time. And so actually, we just sort of, rather than just getting straight into the workshop, I was like, okay, let's stop the plan for a little bit and just actually let everyone say hello and welcome each other. And there was like loads of people being like, oh my God, auntie, I've not seen you in so long. Sister, I've not seen you in so long. There was so many hugs and kisses and just people catching up. And like the first session was actually just a lot of people just reminiscing and catching up. And catching up on their lives, and I think that was really beautiful, and it really speaks to what Nia and Sylvia have been saying about the sisterhood and the community that Positively UK have. And you can see that so strongly, that the women in this room, like the room just lit up with everyone just even just seeing each other. And we hadn't even really started sort of getting into the archives, and already the room was so filled with sort of energy and bubbling with sort of joy. And so from that, we just sort of had conversations about sort of how everyone had been. And I remember we went like so off topic on one point, and we were like, started chatting about like beauty routines and kind of like, I think we're talking about people's makeup and things like that. People would just start chatting actually how they were doing their hair, how they're doing their makeup, how they used to do it sort of back in the day, and then how in different cultures people would do it. It was like those really small moments of like joy and chatting and catching up, and all of those chats I think were some of the most important parts of the archival workshops.
So there's a springboard from the archive actually linking and making deeper connections. And the one thing, Neo, I really remember you telling me was watching how, for some people, this is the first activity they've done since COVID.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were looking forward, to meeting. So, when you were shielding, it was different from when you were isolating. So the people who were shielding were actually required to stay home and not go anywhere. So most of the women were actually shielding. And once this opportunity came, it was like kind of an opening, for women to feel normal again. It was such a good thing to have coming out of, lockdown, to meet together again and do these activities. I want to say the student, were really great, with the creative, workshops. Women made amazing, people didn't believe that they could do, creative, stuff. But what came out of the creative stuff, the zines, the decorations of the t-shirts, and everything, the political messages, the U equals U people decorating their t-shirts with the U equals U, and everything, and all the ideas, The fact that the ideas came from the women themselves, like they were not fed what to do or what to create. Everybody created what they felt they could create. It was like people were free, to think about what they want to do and create whatever they wanted, to create. And that was very empowering.
The other really key thing for me was actually the opportunity for learning. And I say that because we had some students from the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama who worked on placement with us as well. And actually that space, that the knowledge exchange, the offer of information coming both ways. So you said some of the women were like, couldn't believe some of the activities that they and what they produced. Mariam, do you want to talk a bit to that sharing of knowledge that happens both ways, please?
Yeah, so in the first part of the workshops, we had five wonderful students, as you said, on placement with us. So they, alongside myself and UCAT, they helped sort of like planned the workshops, went through the archive and started thinking about what kind of creative, responsive or creative activities that they as facilitators, as theatre makers, as artists, that they knew they could use sort of in community settings and what would sort of work well within those spaces. And a lot of those ideas and activities came from the students, you know, things like the zines, things like making the t-shirts, which all came from the students, which was sort of their knowledge, and then coming into the space and sort of being able to facilitate and share that knowledge of creativity, of artistry, but in return that they were also learning, learning to facilitate, but also, you know, learning about HIV from the women themselves as well. And so that space, the workshops, what was so important was that it was a knowledge exchange, that there was always learning being passed on from both sides. They weren't the teachers, the students, like everyone was sort of an expert in the room in their own sense, and everyone could bring different kinds of knowledge to the table. So that's what the students did, bringing sort of the knowledge of their creativity and artistry.
Whilst the workshop's one part of this project, the other key part of the project is actually this podcast series. Sylvia and Leo, and I know a team of you are part of working together to pull together this range of podcasts and these interviews that we're doing. Could you talk to us a bit about why a podcast series? Why is this important?
I think really it's very important to, you know, to capture those untold stories. It's a kind of a healing process for me. And also it helps me to feel like HIV doesn't define, you know, who I am. And for the longest, since my diagnosis in 97, you know, like Sylvia, I never got sick or was bedridden or never got really any problems. So I've always been healthy, you know, and living my life, but at the same time living my life in denial. So I kind of lived a double life, if I could say, you know, because I had a lot of people around me. You know, I had church community, I had university college community, I have my neighbor's community, that I was completely a different person. So I had to guard myself. I had to guard everything, you know, that I have to say. I would say that I became an expert of faking things or making up things to survive, you know, because then you cannot be yourself. You cannot really talk openly. You know, even though you don't feel, you know, like you're stigmatizing yourself, you still feel like you have to protect, especially when you have children. Even if you wanted to open up and then you're thinking that, how is it going to affect my children? How is it going to affect my mother? How is it going to affect, you know, my family? Then you have to create all these, you know, the kind of double standard living. And then I could not wait for the day that I'm going to the support group to be myself, to be completely neo with, you know, everything, talking about HIV, talking about my kids, talking about my family, talking about everything that outside the world, I cannot really talk about it. To be able to tell these untold stories and, you know, archive them, not only would it be healing to me, it might be healing to the next woman coming. You know, it might relate to them, they might learn from it, you know, they might feel like, oh, I experienced similar, you know things. And for me, that would be the best that would come out of it.
Thanks, Neo. And you, Sylvia?
Well, I feel like it's about time that we talk about the health story of women living with HIV. As a sisterhood, we are a sisterhood with who have to fight. We have to fight to stay alive, you know. We have to fight, and the only way, I mean, I wouldn't be alive. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't be alive if I hadn't found a place. where, as Nell said, I could be myself, I could be valued for who I was, a place in which, and I think that speaks as well of the story of the value of peer support, a space where we were all learning from each other. And I just wanted this opportunity for us to come in all our, you know, in all our differences, in all our richness, in all our craziness, in all our in all our fun, in all our vitality, in all our generosity, in all the kindness, in all the creativity that we have put, you know, in surviving, in thriving, in you know, and I wanted like a space for our, you know, for our creativity and for all of it to be present, not just the HIV, not just the sad story, but 360 degree who we are.
Thank you, Sylvia. And as is our new tradition with this podcast, we're going to end with one question we ask everyone, is what is the one thing that you're bringing you from your past into the future? Who would like to go first?
Now you go first. I need to catch my breath.
Okay. Before my diagnosis, you know, I was looking forward, you know, to life. I moved to come to England, you know, to make a life, to come and study, make a lot of money, build myself an empire in Africa. And boom, 6 months along the line, before I even, you know, started my dream, I got my diagnosis. Now my dream was shattered. However, when I got diagnosed, I knew little about HIV. I knew about AIDS because I had seen people in Africa. If you came from Botswana and South Africa, you would know what a picture of AIDS looked like then. And it was an illness that was known to be for people who were prostitutes or people who were having a relationship with a white man. And I never did any of those. And I still was diagnosed with HIV. To me, it didn't make sense. My employers came to visit me at the hospital. So I just openly told them straight away that, oh, the doctors are saying that I have HIV. That's when I started learning that, oh, this is actually a big deal, because they were like, okay, how did you, you know, started asking me questions. How did I get it? Questions that I didn't really know, you know. And then I got discharged back home. And then there was separation. They separated everything, my cup, my spoon, the bathroom. I had to use a different bathroom from away from the kids because I was a au pair, so I was looking after the children. That's when I started realizing that, oh, this is a problem, you know, and everything. So I stopped living my life. For 6 months, I was not referred to any support. So I was just isolated and just hoping to be like those people I left in South Africa that I saw with AIDS. That's what I was looking forward to. And it was not happening. And I was wondering, why am I not like them? You know, I'm looking okay. I'm not losing my hair. My skin color is not changing. I am just coughing. Then I got referred to Positively UK, I think 6 months or a year later, Positively Women. So going to Positively Women, I expected to find some dying women there. That's what I was thinking. I'm going to join, you know, the queue, you know, of the dying women. This is where, you know, the doctor is sending me to. When I got there, I found beautiful women, happy women, you know, together, a meal is being cooked. The confidence, I don't have the confidence. I'm new in this country. I don't really know what is happening here. By meeting other women, by accessing peer support, you know, I started, you know, seeing that I'm going to live my life. You know, there were women in the room who then were talking about having had HIV for 20 years. you know, and I'm like, okay, if this woman has had it for 20 years and I've only just had it for 6 months, then that means I could live another 20 years. So I started living my life, you know, then got opportunities, you know, possibly women was offering volunteer roles and everything, started volunteering, started getting involved in many projects that possibly women, you know, was doing. But still knowing that, oh, I have this illness that has to kill me. So the long-term psychological impact of, you know, the living with HIV was still at the back of my head, even though I was living my life, but I was living my life with this, you know, thing going at the back of my mind that I'm supposed to be sick, lying in a hospital bed, you know, and dying. But then again, I saw one lady having, you know, children and everything, and I've always wanted to have children and everything. And I learned again about how to live my life positively, that, you know, I could still have children, you know, and live my life. So what I want to bring into this is to bring my self-worth, you know, back. You know, I cannot perhaps make up for the time I've lost trying to wait to die and not dying. There's a lot of life events, you know, that happens that knocks you down once or twice, but I've learned that I have to get up 77 times, you know, and live my life. When I got diagnosed, I had, you know, some women who were supporting me then that I am supporting them now, you know, in their old age. You know, things have reversed for the best, you know, for me, because like giving back, you know, to these ladies, you know, supporting them and sharing with them and, you know, empowering them and, you know, for them looking up, you know, to me is, it's like such an amazing, you know, feeling. I could not, you know, give it up for anything.
Thanks, Mia. That beautiful cyclical sharing of that, and also for sharing all of that. Thank you. We all really appreciate that. So thank you. Sylvia, for you?
HIV has been my teacher. I often say that. And I think the greatest lesson that HIV has given me is to really value every single moment of my life. That the time that I have is precious. Obviously, I've been incredibly lucky to live in the UK and have access to free treatment, care, and support, and to be alive, because so many people have died and continue to die because they don't have access to treatment. But, you know, so I want to say that, you know, I acknowledge my incredible luck and privilege. But in spite of that, I wouldn't change my life. I wouldn't want not to live with HIV, because I wouldn't have met the people I've met, and I wouldn't be the woman I'm now. You know, I wouldn't have discovered how strong I am. And I think that's what HIV has taught me. HIV has taught me to embrace life as it is.
Amazing. Thank you, Sylvia. Mariam, what's the one thing that you've learned that you're taking into the future?
I'll talk about specific to Positively UK. And I think from being invited into this space and being able to watch and listen and learn and bear witness to the wonderful work that goes on in this organisation, I think I'd bring all of the sort of radical things and that you do and the way that space is held at Positively UK, that, you know, things like kindness and joy and sisterhood and community are radical and are so important, and the importance of women just taking up space and just being there, and the importance of just being in a room filled with lots of women, and just how like important a small act like that can be, and women talking and chatting and sharing and, you know, dancing and writing poetry and making zines, and how radical creativity is. And I'm going to take that into my future and just all of that into my practice and my own work, and, you know, even my relationships with other people, just all of those amazing things that working with Positively UK has taught me.
Awesome. Thank you all so very much for sharing, for contributing to today's podcast. It has been such a delight to start to hear some of these stories. I look forward to being able to speak to you both in the other episodes where we're going to unpack some of these questions a bit further. But for now, thank you and really enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more, please like and subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends. If you are affected by anything shared in the podcast, please see the Positively UK website for a list of their services and other support organisations. I've been Kat Lowe. These podcasts have been edited by Chuck Blue Lowry, coordinated with Joy and Solidarity by Mariam Shahara-Dean and Chriselle Dukuzin, music by Jessica Roach.